Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Welcome, guys, to episode 32 of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni. Thank you for being here tonight. You can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd, my co-host.
And I am Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler.
And we are very excited today to have Tony Sinanis, who is currently in his sixth year as the lead learner of Cantiagua?
Sure, we can call it that. It's actually Caniag.
Caniag, I'm sorry. Elementary in Jericho, New York.
Yes.
The school was named a 2012 National Blue Ribbon School, and mm-hmm. Tony recently received the 2013 BAMI Award for Elementary School Principal of the Year. So yes. Thanks, Tony, for being here with us today. We really appreciate it.
No problem. I squeeze you right in between, you know, Primetime and Jimmy Kimmel. They're interviewing you later, so it's all good. No worries.
Hey, well, that's just, as long as when you go on Jimmy Kimmel, you mention your Edu All-Stars interview.
Hello, Tech Ninja Todd. You are like the man. Like, didn't you go to the White House? You met, like, the president. I did nothing. What are you talking about?
Hey, Jimmy Kimmel is about as cool as the president.
I think so. I think
that's a good point. That's a very good point.
I think you're right.
Well, you know, Tony, one of the first things we kind of like to ask our guests is just to get a little bit of background of how they ended up in the education field. So what was your journey?
Okay. So I went to college to be a doctor. Actually, I was in a pre-med program. And after about 6 months, it was clear that I was not meant to be a doctor, mainly because it requires passing science classes. And that was not my area of expertise. So I shifted gears. And I did several things. I had, I think, about six majors between that one and actually deciding on education. So the shift for me happened when, as part of our sort of degree at Union College. I started at Union College, which is in upstate New York. Great school, great small liberal arts school. But part of our studies required that we did some sort of community service. So I did tutoring at an after-school program with like upper elementary and middle school kids. And we did that every week, and it slowly became the highlight of my week, you know, and what I looked forward to, what I got excited about, and working with these kids definitely changed my thinking about what I wanted to do. So after majoring in theater, psychology, English, and a couple of other things, I decided on elementary education, and I actually transferred to NYU because the program I wanted to pursue, they didn't have at Union, so I transferred and graduated from there, and it was definitely the best decision I've ever made in terms of fulfilling my professional sort of dream. I love it. It's like the best job ever.
Cool. So how many years did you teach in the classroom?
So I taught for 8 years. I started in New York City, so it was one of those crazy things. Like, I got my job 3 days before the school year started, right? They went into, like, this open, like, cattle call of, like, we need teachers, so everyone and their mother was there. I went on a bunch of interviews, and I sat with this one assistant principal, and, you know, we talked. And then he offered me a job on the spot. And not only did he offer me a job, but he was like, do you want to be the writing teacher, K-5, or do you want to be a fifth grade teacher? So there was this thing about having a class, I wanted my own kids, all that stuff. So I was like, yeah, definitely the fifth grade teacher. So I accepted the job. I didn't have time to think about it, didn't have time to talk about it with anyone, because he was like, yeah, I need to know in like 5 minutes because they're wrapping up the job fair. I was like, okay. So I taught for 3 years in New York City, but my first job was amazing. I had 37 fifth graders in my first class, and I had desks for maybe about 20 of them. And so we innovated. We innovated at a time where innovation wasn't even cool, because we figured out how to squeeze everyone into the room, and we used the rug, the windowsill. My desk became a spot. Whatever space we had in the room became a place to learn. So it was great. I did that for 2 years in that school, and then I taught for a year in Manhattan. I taught fourth grade. And then I moved out to Long Island in Hewlett, where I also taught fifth grade for 5 years. So it was a total of 8 years teaching, mostly fourth and fifth grade.
Yeah. So there comes a time in a lot of teachers' career where they have to make a decision on whether they want to stay in the classroom or do something else related to the campus. When did you decide you were ready to move kind of into the administrative role?
So I did my first master's in educational technology at a local tech school in on Long Island. And when I was done, one of the professors, she kind of like cornered me one day, and she said, you know, I really think you need to consider at least getting an administrative degree. If for nothing else, it kind of gives you that global perspective on the school and how it runs, and all that stuff. And it just makes you more marketable if you ever want to pursue it. So I did. It was relatively cheap. They let me teach a class as well, so it made it even cheaper. So I did it. I had it. I had the degree for a couple of years. And then our son was born. And so he had some medical issues at birth, which just kind of like threw us for a loop a little bit and totally introduced a new normal for us. But what started to happen was, I don't know, I thought that because he was around and I, for the first time in my life, understood like unconditional love and this other sure. human being like becomes your everything, right? I was like, oh, I don't know if I could be a classroom teacher anymore because those kids are my life and I devote so much of everything to them. That is it even possible to split this? You know, is it even possible to manage both of these things? So it was more of like a fear kind of thing. Like, I don't think I could be as good as I was because of this little man, you know? So I started going on interviews, and I got offered an assistant principal position at an elementary school that was close by, even closer to home than my teaching position was. And I figured if there was a time to make the jump, that was the time and see what happens, you know? And so that's what I was about 8 years in. And it was really that sort of thing about whether or not I could actually split myself between family and school. But I was wrong, by the way, because being the principal requires a whole lot more than being the teacher sometimes. So
you started off as an AP and then moved your way into principalship, and that's where you're at now?
That's where I'm at. Yeah, I was an assistant principal for 1 year. I can just say to anyone out there who's considering administration, if you get an assistant principal position, do not rush out of the assistant principal position because it is a wonderful thing to be able to pass the buck to someone else. it is a wonderful thing to be the person that said, I don't know, you know, that's what the principal said. It's a whole different thing, and I only did it for 1 year, and I mean, I love being a principal, but there's something really special about being an assistant principal that I wish I had done a little bit longer.
Yeah, right. That's great. That's great knowledge. I'm going through a master's program right now, and that's a it's timely for sure.
It is. It's a humbling thing, right? Because you know, you always feel like you know better. Like, I could do this differently. I could do this, you know. And my principal was amazing, it was just a really wonderful learning opportunity to be in an assistant principal position, and I could have learned a lot more. So,
cool. Very cool.
Well, you're also someone who has chosen to connect yourself via social media. How did that come about when you wanted to make that leap?
So initially our district was pushing Twitter on us as a way to communicate with parents and mainly just like upcoming events kind of stuff, you know, or activities and so on and so forth. So I was totally resistant. I didn't like it. I didn't like the idea of it. You know, Twitter had this whole sort of negative, in my mind, connotation. It was, you know, a place where you, I don't know, I don't really care what Britney Spears is doing and I don't really want to know what Nicki Minaj is eating for dinner or, you know, whatever. So in my mind, that's what it was, right? And cyberbullying and all this stuff. So I wanted to kind of stay away from it. I resisted at first. They let go of it. They didn't force us to do it. And then I read the article about Eric in School Administrator, I think in like December of 2011 or January of 2012. I don't remember exactly when it was. I read about this sort of group of educators that were using Twitter to connect, to share, to learn, to curate information, to professionally develop themselves, and all these really amazing things at their fingertips, you know, on their phone or on their iPad or on their desktop. And it just was a no-brainer, at least to explore it, you know? And so I did. And here I am 2 years later, and it has actually now become the focus of my dissertation. I'm in the middle of doing my doctoral studies at University of Pennsylvania. And for my dissertation, I am studying or exploring, I have to get the question right because there's a whole thing about this, I am exploring the relationship between active participation on Twitter and the professional development of principals. So it's led to a lot, you know, it's led to a lot of things. It's been an amazing journey. And, you know, and all it took was reading about Eric Scheminger and seeing how he was using it and how other educators were using it to kind of demystify all the, you know, the stuff that was out there that I didn't really understand. So I'm very glad I took the leap and got connected.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we don't talk to anyone that says, Twitter's overrated. You know, everyone loves it. It's amazing. Once you figure it out and you get past that little kind of learning curve right up front,
right.
It's just like, blah.
Yes. Like you have an epiphany, right? Like the light
exactly.
comes down, right. The halo and the angel wings. No, it's crazy. And you don't know that, Eric, because initially it's kind of humbling, right? Because if you know, until you develop your PLN and you start to connect with people, you're putting I don't know, random tweets out there, no one's responding. And initially, sure. I was like, what the heck is this? I'm not wasting my time with this crap. You know, so it initially is a turnoff. And I see for people who go to, like, training sessions or workshops or whatever, that they, the majority of people get turned off because there isn't that instantaneous sort of, you know, connection or oh, I'm just going to put it on Twitter and get it. It takes time. It's a journey, right? And so you have to recognize that that's how this plays out.
Yeah, I had a cool little thing happen today. We were in a professional development for this new software that we got called Safari Montage. And so right when the session started, I just tweeted out, hey, guys, anyone ever heard of, you know, Safari Montage? Just on my PLN. And a couple people started responding back, and one girl ends up saying, yeah, it's pretty good, but I really like Discovery Education for science better. And then here comes Discovery Education pop in. Hey, thanks for the nod. Da-da-da. And, like, all this happened within 15 minutes while I'm sitting there in a professional development. I'm like, this is what it's about. I mean, and all, you know, all my colleagues around, it should have been a teachable moment right there. I should have stood up and go, listen, this just happened. And I'm kind of, I guess I'm kind of pissed that I didn't do that. But I should have.
I hear you. I mean, and you know, and the crazy thing is that you start to connect with people you're not really connected with, right? So I was walking around school and I took a picture of a fifth grade class that was doing something with equivalent fractions or whatever. And all I tweeted was, you know, fifth graders, Kenyan fifth graders exploring equivalent fractions. So within minutes, the teacher, because I tagged her in the tweet, she got tweets from different people or organizations or whatever who do stuff with equivalent fractions. She had two people email her links to, like, websites where they have all these online activities, and she was like, Tony, it totally transformed my whole unit on fractions, right?
That's
amazing. Specifically, it was awesome. And she's on Twitter, but she doesn't really get it, and she said, she's like, I had that moment. I got it. She's like, I didn't even ask for it, but people were willingly sharing and giving me resources. So that's it. That's it in a nutshell. That's, like, that's what Twitter is about.
Definitely. So you also serve as the founder and the co-moderator of NY Ed Chat, and then also the co-moderator of PT Chat. How do those come about? And I'd like to hear a little. I think most of us know what the state Ed Chats are, but I want to hear more about PT Chat and what that is.
Well, all right. We'll start with PT Chat. I'm lucky because I'm riding the coattails of my buddy Joe Mazza, really. So I can't take any credit for PT Chat, but that's his baby. And basically, it's a parent teacher chat that happens Wednesday nights at 9 o'clock. So it's happening in like 15 minutes, and clearly I'm not going to be able to participate. So Joe, don't be mad at me. But
sorry, Joe.
Yeah, it's all your fault. It's Todd's fault. I started participating in it about a year and a half ago, just, you know, randomly, and I didn't know Joe, and actually Joe ended up being a student at Penn as well in the same doctoral program that I was in, except ahead of me in the program, and so then we connected in real life, right, and that's always great, right, to take that sort of PLN thing from online, and then when you meet that person in real life, it's a great thing because you feel like you've known them, right, forever. And so having participated in a bunch of PT chats, Joe was like, listen, would you want to be one of the moderators? And it's a great opportunity to have this dialogue with so many constituent groups because you have, obviously, administrators on the chat, you have teachers who are on the chat, but even more importantly, you have parents on the chat and families who are looking to link the community and the school, right, and looking to flatten the walls and really get a sense of what's going on in schools. And it's also an opportunity for us to hear what's important to them. So PT Chat is, like, definitely one of my favorite chats to participate in because there are so many perspectives being presented. And sometimes we even get students on there. Student Voice will participate. Stu Voice, like hashtag Stu Voice, gets involved as well. So then you have everyone really vocalizing. You have superintendents there. So it really is a wonderful, powerful chat. And I learned so much about connecting with the community and interacting with families and raising the level of engagement. So PT Chat is definitely one that I highly recommend. Not just because I'm one of the moderators, because I'm not even that good of a moderator, but I do think it's a great chat that all educators and families should participate in. And as a dad, it gives me a different perspective as well. And I find myself answering the questions, you know, a different way depending on what lens I'm, you know, looking through. As for NY Edge,
9 p.m. on Wednesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern.
9 p.m. Eastern, yes. I just assume the whole world is on Eastern Standard Time, so really, why do we talk about anything else? But it is Eastern Standard Time. 9 p.m. Eastern. And then the other one we do is NY Ed Chat. So, and that kind of started because Tom would be, I don't know, I kiddingly sent him a tweet. I was like, dude, what's up? Why don't we have any NY Ed Chat going on? And so Tom wrote me back. He's like, I don't know, why don't we have it? Why don't you start it? I was like, oh, shucks, Tom Whidbey just called me out on Twitter to start, like, NY Ed Chat. So you can't say no to Tom, right?
No.
So he's going to come, like, wrap me up in a Hawaiian shirt or something. So I did not – I took that as a motivation to to just go with it. So I actually connected with my friend Bill Brennan, who's active on Twitter, Dr. Bill Brennan on Twitter. He's a great guy. He's local on Long Island as well, an amazing thinker. And we just started talking about it, and he was like, sure, let's do it. So it was kind of organic at first, and we did it like once a month. We couldn't manage more than that because we're not the most organized, but that's okay. And then it has evolved. So now we have a bunch of moderators. We have Vicky Day and Carol Velasarda and Blanca Duarte and Star. So we have a bunch of moderators, which is great, and they have totally enhanced the experience. We've had, you know, guest speakers on Monday night, January 27th at 9 p.m. We're doing a joint NYED chat with Dave Burgess, Teach Like a Pirate chat.
Oh, cool.
Oh, yes, we love Dave.
Very excited. Dave is awesome. So we're doing that, and these moderators who joined our team this year, they really upped the game, because Bill and I were kind of like, yeah, we'll just talk about whatever. But now we have, like, you know, Chris Lehman is going to be on in a couple of weeks, and an author is going to be on in a couple of months, whatever the case may be. And when we're trying to really make that the platform for New York educators to connect, because interestingly enough, as huge as New York is, the state, and as many schools and educators as we have in the state, for whatever reason, it is such a low, minimally represented community on Twitter. And so we're trying to build that and give them a platform to connect and see the power in those connections.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We always hear about how great learners continue their learning. One way we do that through is through reading. So do you have any books that you're currently reading or have read in the past that you'd recommend, maybe education or even otherwise?
Okay. Well, I can give you several books because
right,
I'm in the middle of a doctoral program. That's all I do is read. I got books, not much else. I got no money. All right, wait. But first and foremost, for any elementary and middle school person, you must read the book Wonder by R.J. Palacio.
Yes. Okay? Yes.
That is like a life-changing book. It is like a defining moment, and it is a book that every person must read because in a nutshell, it talks about being kinder than necessary. So we can all be kind, but can we be kinder than necessary? And can we look past that exterior? And not in that very superficial judge a book by its cover kind of way, but the depth that is there with people and individuals and getting to know them and valuing them. It is the most amazing book I have read in a very long time. So I highly recommend that one, okay? All right, I'm going to keep it to kids. Can we just keep it to kids' books? No one wants to hear about my doctoral studies. It's not really interesting. but it's interesting to me, and I'm paying a lot of money, so I'm going to make it interesting to other people. Now, you all have to read the book Fig Pudding by Ralph Fletcher. Fig Pudding is a chapter book. It's one of Ralph's earlier chapter books. Such an amazing story about a family. They have like five or six kids and their journey over the course of a year. It's a bit sad. There's a sad point in the book that is, you know, I feel like with every kid's realistic fiction book, there's some sort of horrible situation that happens. But anyway, it is a great, great book. And Ralph Fletcher is on Twitter, so you can connect with him there. I highly, highly recommend that book. And then the other book that I think is a great book is There's Something About Georgie. The Thing About Georgie. My wife is correcting me. The Thing About Georgie by Lisa Graff, I think is her name. Very similar to the themes that are presented in Wonder. And that book is about a little boy who's impacted by some sort of developmental issue, and then his family is expecting another baby and sort of what he has to deal with as he prepares for this and what normal will look like if the baby is, you know, quote-unquote normal. So I highly recommend all three of those books, must-reads for parents, teachers, kids, definitely through middle school. They're game changers.
Okay, so have you read Because of Mr. Turrupt?
No, I don't know Because of Mr.
Turrupt. You need to read that one.
Okay.
That and Wonder are the two books that my reading teacher partner gave me to read last year that are at the top of my list of the best books I've read.
Because of Mr.
Turrupt. T-E-R-U-P-T.
Okay, I'm writing it down.
I'm not sure who the author is, but my mom's an English teacher too, and I gave it to her. I mean, it'll make you cry, so be prepared for that.
You know.
But it's so good.
I like a good tearjerker. I'm all about the tearjerkers. Bring it on. I got my Kleenex, and I'm ready to go.
Well, if you read it, you have to let me know what you think.
Okay, I will. Listen, I have a lot of free time between this dissertation and stuff.
Exactly. So
I'm going to find time to – you know what? Okay, wait. I have to say, actually, if there's a professional book that you must read – okay, I don't mean to backtrack, but I just read this book because I made time to read it I will openly admit I'm not the biggest fan of reading, just in general, because I have a little ADHD thing going on, and so if I pick up a book, my mind goes about a million other places. But you have to read the book by Chris Lehman and Kate Roberts about loving close reading, which, of course, right now the title is escaping me, but I just read it. An amazing book about close reading. And so with the Common Core and shifts in instruction and all this stuff, which can stress people out, this book is a really wonderful sort of outline for how to how close reading can look in your classroom and what it means for kids and how we can get kids to use a close read to have a deeper understanding of vocabulary and text and have richer connections and things like that. Highly recommend that book.
Falling in love with close reading.
You got it, Chris. There you are the go. Man.
How about that?
I got nothing.
Google to the rescue.
I can't focus on the title of the book because all I see in the background of my computer is this, and I'm just dying to have some kettle pop. I'll do it after.
Oh, that's hilarious. So recently you were recognized by the BAMI Awards for your Elementary School Principal of the Year. Can you tell us a little bit more about that experience?
It's completely humbling. Not at all deserved. So either clearly they just miscounted the votes. I don't know what happened. Anyway, it was you know, so I didn't really know anything about the BAMIs until started seeing people tweeting about it. You know, I looked into it. I thought it was great. I thought it was great that there was this organization or group of educators that existed that was looking to recognize all the awesome things that are happening in education, right? All the awesome teachers and preschool teachers and nurses and administrators and all that stuff. So I actually nominated our library media specialist. She likes to be called the librarian, but she says that's old school, so I got to say library media specialist. I nominated her for that, for the BAMI. For that, there was a category. So somehow word got out that I nominated her, and I purposely chose her just because she's phenomenal, and the library is like the hub of everything in our school. But anyway, and we have an amazing staff, and it could have been any teacher, but there was a category. It spoke to me. We nominated her. Somehow, I don't know, some parents found out. I think our PTA co-president maybe found out, and suddenly I got nominated for this thing, right, which was great. It was a great honor. She wrote the nicest thing. And then people were, like, tweeting about it and putting it on Facebook and emailing about it, like, the parents and the whole community. And suddenly people were writing all these, like, ridiculously kind things about me and my leadership and my role as a principal and the impact that I have on their kids. And it was unreal. I can't even tell you, because you do this job that you love, and it does not feel like work. And so the reward is in that. Like, it's in walking around a building and having a first grader hug you, a.k.a. tackle you, and in the hallway, and that's all you need. That's all you want, you know, or have a conversation with a teacher about instruction and think about how it could be enhanced or whatever. And those things happen for me every day. So in my mind, I was like, this is ridiculous to even get nominated, but it's great. It's an honor. Right. Wonderful. Okay, so now the backstory is that the BAMIs, all the emails they were sending me the whole time, were going into my spam, so I didn't even know that I was like a finalist for the thing, and I didn't realize what was going on exactly. I did hear that they announced some sort of, I don't know, the voice, I don't even know what it was, but one person from each category won some sort of voice honor or something, so I did not win that. I just assumed, okay, I'm not winning the award, it doesn't really matter, I'm not interested, it's fine, I'm okay with it. Only to finally get contacted by the BAMIs, because they were like, wait a second, are you coming or not? You're one of our five finalists, you need to come. I was like, okay, so we'll go. I went to Washington, D.C., it was unreal, like, to be around all these, like, Joe Mazza and Lynn Hilt and Chris, whose last name I can't say, Wedger in Canada, and someone else was nominated as well, these other principals who I learned so much from, who have impacted my thinking, not to mention all the secondary principals like Jimmy Cassis and Eric Scheninger, who were also nominated, and Chris Lehman. All these amazing people were there. Pernil was there, and Daisy, and Jeff Zuhl, and Tom. I mean, it was crazy. Adam Bellow, I mean, Amanda Dykes, all these people. I was like in awe. I was in line at this place, and all I cared about was seeing all these people. Anyway, well, we get inside, and one of the first awards they give out was elementary school principal. And as we're waiting for them to announce the winner, I have about 14 mints in my hand because I want a mint, and they fell out of the little package. Instead of just getting one, I have like 14. And then they announce my name, and I'm like, holy crap, I have all these mints in my hand. So what I do, I squeeze my hand shut, They melted and stuck to the inside of my hand, but I got up there.
And I
picked up the award. It was great. It was good times. The award weighs a lot more than you think it does. And it was really surreal. I can't even tell you. I am beyond humbled and honored to even be in this group of people, right, to be recognized by these people, and then to actually be honored in that way. It was great. I gave a horrible acceptance speech or whatever. I don't even know what I said. It was not nice. I didn't thank my family. I didn't thank anyone. But it was a really wonderful experience in the end. So award aside, to get to hang out with like Tom Murray, like I said, and Joe Mazza and Eric, and to spend time just talking to them. Erin Cline. I mean, Erin Cline is amazing. She's like this.
Love Erin Cline.
Oh my God. Yeah. Joan Young. Like, what's her name? Joyce Valencia. All these people were there, and all I did was talk to these people and learn. And I'm talking about in the lobby of the hotel having a conversation with Erin Cline and Joan Young about mindful thinking and kids and instruction and whatever. And where were we? I mean, they were jogging. I mean, I was not jogging, but they came in from some sort of walk or whatever, you know. And it was a game changer for me. Like, it really, yeah. It was an amazing experience.
I think the cool thing, I can probably speak for them too, the cool thing is they're probably thinking the exact same thing when they're there too. They don't deserve to be there and yada yada, and I get to hang out with all these cool people. I would imagine that they all feel the exact same way. It's really, that's what's cool about it.
It's crazy. You know, like, you meet Erin Cline, I felt like I was meeting, like, Madonna, you know? or, you know, Pernille. Pernille was like a giant and could step on me if she wanted to, you know, but she was this just great person. And you just talk to these people who you know, and you know how they think, right? Because on Twitter we share, for the most part, we're pretty transparent about our thinking and our love for instruction and education and whatever. But then you get to talk to them in real life, and it goes to a whole other level. And so for me, the BAMMies was about that. The BAMMy Award is beautiful. It sits on my table at work. It's lovely. But the experience was, for me, wow. It was just awesome.
Cool.
Well, you know, talking about building relationships and connecting with people, as an administrator and even as a teacher, you know, you connect with a lot of adults and students throughout your career. Can you think of a particular interaction that you've had with maybe a student or a family or a parent that is just going to stick with you for a lifetime?
Oh, now that's a big question, Tom. I've been doing this for like 17 years, and a lot of them. Oh my gosh! I don't know that I could pick just one. I don't know. First of all, I could tell you that I honestly and genuinely believe that most of my students now at Candy Egg and the ones that I taught when I was a teacher think that they're my favorite. All my kids, and they really are, right? You know, I mean, you connect with different kids in different ways, so not that anyone's your favorite, but you might have a different type of connection with certain kids. So, all right, so I'll tell you about one kid. I had Alex, I won't say his last name, but I had Alex when he was in fifth grade, and Alex lost his dad on 9/11, and so I started tutoring Alex after school, I don't know, once or twice a week or whatever it was. And I watched this little kid, you know, because he was this little kid. He was 10, 11 years old, and he lost his dad. And he, like, immediately had to grow up and be mature and be thoughtful and think about his mom and, you know, things that most 11-year-olds don't have to worry about. And he did it in such a mature way. I would go tutor him, but I can tell you that I learned more about life from watching this little boy than anything else. I don't know what he learned from me. I don't know, but we'll go with it because we... He graduated from high school and he's in law school now, so something must have happened correctly along the way. But that was a game changer for me to be a part of this kid's life from the time he was like 10 or 11 and to still be a part of his life. We're friends on Facebook. We text. I had dinner with him, you know, a while back. He just taught me. He gave me perspective, right? And so everything can be great one day and then it just all changes. And how do you respond to that? And how do you function after that? That's what life is about, and so I learned that from Alex, along with a lot of other kids who taught me so much about what matters. So yeah, that's one, and that's a family I stay in touch with, and that are very close and dear to my heart.
Cool. If you could go back 5 or 10 years and give yourself some advice, what kind of advice would you tell yourself?
It is a marathon, not a race, so don't sprint. Right? Is that the phrase? I don't know, but like, And balance. Balance is really important because you can easily throw yourself into this thing, you know. I think educators, for the most part, aside from the ones who give us a bad name, and I don't think there are many of those, but they are there. Most of us lead with our heart, right? That's why we do this. I don't mean just lead as a principal, but even in your classroom. And oftentimes we think with our heart before we even think with our head, because we're impacting kids, right? We're shaping kids and their thinking, and we're trying to model for them. So for me, going back and just reminding myself to maintain balance and to take care of myself and to maintain hobbies and interests of my own, so that you could have that place to escape to, because this job is very, and it's not a job because it's a life, right? It's emotionally exhausting in amazing ways, but also in really challenging ways. And so you need that balance to kind of maintain the energy and the enthusiasm that's needed to be, I feel like, a successful educator.
Right. Well, you know, if someone were to describe you and use only three words, what are three words you would hope that they would use when describing you?
That I hope that they would use. Okay, hope that they would use. All right. Stunningly good looking. No, I'm just kidding. all right, let's see.
Your wife is rolling. I can hear your wife rolling her eyes in the back.
She actually left the room about 4 minutes ago. She was like, I'm done. I don't want to hear this anymore. Especially when I said balance, because I have none. But anyway, so, all right, I would say that I hope people would describe me as compassionate. I hope that people would describe me as thoughtful. I try to be thoughtful about what I do and say and the people around me. And I hope that people, I don't know, this is not a word, but although I take my job really seriously, I don't take myself really seriously. And so laughter is a big part of my day, of my work. I incorporate it into faculty meetings. I incorporate it into PTA meetings. I will often have people tell me, have you thought about doing a stand-up gig? Maybe funny. Maybe we'll go with funny, but it's more about that sort of self-effacing, like, right. Yeah, right, my job is important, but I'm not that important, because anyone could do my job, but it's how well I could do it that matters. And so those three things, I think, would, I don't know, I would hope. And skinny. Hello, skinny.
And super tall, right?
Super tall and skinny. Yeah, hello. And next year I'm going to win the BAMMY for best looking administrator. No, but yeah, those are three qualities that I try to espouse, and my dad definitely imparted on me, I feel like, pretty consistently.
That's great. Well, is there a moment in your career when you kind of look back and think, and it's something that you're really proud of accomplishing?
There are many, and honestly, very few of them are associated with me, that I don't even associate with myself. Like, I wouldn't, the BAMMYs, being at the BAMMYs would be at the top of my list, but because of the people that were there. But
right.
I think about our school. So I think about two things. So one is when we won the Blue Ribbon, and that's a great honor, but the process before that was really powerful, because I don't know if either of you have ever participated in the Blue Ribbon like application process, but you have to write like 20 essays. And typically, from what I hear from other administrators, it's like two or three people, like usually the principal and a helper or assistant principal, whatever, they get together, they spend days and weeks writing these essays, and it's a, you know, pretty laborious process. We, as a staff, we were at a faculty meeting, and I was like, listen, we got nominated for Blue Ribbon. I don't really have that much time, so I can't write these essays. So they are all here on big chart paper. Do you guys want to do this? Do we want to apply for the Blue Ribbon? Can we do this together? And within minutes, our staff split up into little teams and groups. They each took a question, and over the course of like 2 weeks, they got together on their lunch. They came in early. They stayed late. They wrote these amazing essays about our school, because the questions were about, you know, reading instruction and math instruction and the content areas and me as a leader and our community and so on and so forth. And their voice told that story, and it was awesome. It was so awesome to read these pieces that I didn't have to write. Well, I didn't have to write them, which was great. Talk about delegating, but no. but it was wonderful to hear that this group of like 70 people, who in the end, that's about how many participated, came out with such common themes and strands that ran between all these pieces. It was awesome. So that was definitely one. The other one would probably be when our main office, so in our main office we have two secretaries. In my second year there, one of our secretaries passed away after a really long battle with ovarian cancer. I don't know if any of you have experienced that, but that is like a game changer. It can be a game changer for a building. Like, it can impact the tone, the culture, the morale, you name it, especially when it's a person that everyone respected and loved, and they did, yeah. Phyllis, you know. But when Phyllis passed away, the thing that blew me away was how our community came together for her family, came together for each other. The day that the funeral happened, was a day that it was a school day, so we had to figure out coverage, and it was not even an issue. Teachers came from other buildings to cover, to teach. I mean, it was unbelievable to watch and to see the way our community not only connected, but solidify this connection that has sustained us for years. And so from something so negative and painful came something so incredibly positive.
Yeah, very cool. So last question we like to kind of in note on is, what are you really passionate about right now in education?
State testing and high stakes Common Core. No, I'm just kidding.
Good answer.
Come on, I like
us too. We love it too.
Don't you love it? I want to reduce every teacher to a number on her or his evaluation. I love that. My favorite thing. I love to torture kids for 6 days of state testing every year, third. My favorite days. Those are my things. No, I think what am I most passionate about? I'm most passionate about right now about telling our story, and so this whole branding thing has, you know, come into my space, and I learned a lot about it from Eric. Eric is like the man, right? I mentioned his name like 15 times already, but yes, okay. So I've learned a lot from Eric Schenninger, and he's all about branding, right? So I connected with Joe Sanfilippo, who is a superintendent in Wisconsin. Through Twitter, we connected, and somehow we both ended up at Ed Camp, New Jersey, and because he came out east for a visit or whatever, and we did this thing together about branding and telling our story. And it has blossomed into something great. Like, we have this great connection. We're always sharing. We're blogging about it. We do a weekly or biweekly podcast on the BAM network. And now there's possibly a book. I don't know, whatever. We're very early stages in a conversation about that. And this whole idea of telling our story, because we as educators, right, we know what's happening in our schools. And there are so many amazing things happening in our schools. So why let other people tell the world what's happening? Why let the local paper... You know, because in New York, we have local papers that write that we make too much money, we have too much time off, that, you know, our kids are struggling, we're behind the gap, and every country in the world except, you know, us is making progress. But that's not true. Like, that's not actually what's going on. And we know what's happening in our schools. And so it is our responsibility. It's incumbent upon us to tell our story, to spotlight our kids, spotlight our staff, spotlight our community. And so for me, I have thrown myself into that 100%, and I live it all day. I tweet about what's happening in school. I tweet pictures and captions of our kids and our staff, what they're doing, but not just what they're doing, how we're doing it, and why we're doing it. I send a link out every week with through Storify that curates all the tweets. We do a weekly video update with our kids. They tell the story. Like, who better to hear than a second grader telling you what they're learning in school and how excited they are to be there? You know. So for me, that is something that I'm really passionate about, and I feel like it's an opportunity that every educator should and could take advantage of. Like, you tell us what's going on in your classroom. You tell us what's going on in your school, and be proud of it, because there are awesome things happening. And it has transformed our community. Like, I have conversations with parents now about book clubs and about writer's workshop and about one-to-one conferencing, because they see it. They know what it is. So we're not just talking about bake sales and the bus. Gosh, the bus. There's always problems on the bus, right? But we don't even talk about that anymore, because we're talking about these important opportunities for learning. So I'm all about that, telling your story. That's where my heart is right now.
Yeah, good for you. That's awesome. What a fantastic answer.
I'm very lucky.
Well, Tony, you know, we want to thank you so much for coming on with us today. You have been on our list for a while, and I'm glad we were able to get a hold of you and get you on here. It has been great hearing you share and getting to learn a little bit more about you. So thank you so much.
Are you kidding me? Thank you, guys. I love watching your show. I love listening to the people talk about their passions and their interests. The format is awesome. So thank you very much for inviting me. I don't belong in the crowd. Yes, that's been on already.
Yes, you do. Yes, but you do.
But I know that John Fritzky probably threatened you, so I'm good. I'm glad you put me on.
Yeah, John Fritzky was all over me, but that's okay.
No, thank you. Thank you, guys. Keep doing what you're doing, because your enthusiasm is not just here, like watching you, but even through your tweets, it's inspiring. And it's great to know that people like you are impacting kids every single day. So keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Well,
for those of you that are listening, we want to remind you can connect with us on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ. Our website is eduallstars.com, and you can find us on iTunes by searching EduAllStars with no spaces.
And then next Wednesday, January 29th, we'll be live with John Samuelson, also known as iPad Sammy, at 8 o'clock Central. Stay tuned for that. I'm sure he's planning to sink the boat.
It will be
interesting for sure. I think he's already scheming something up for us. So.
You better watch him. He's trouble.
Yeah, and we also encourage you to subscribe to, via iTunes. Leave a rating and some feedback if you like the show, and we would really appreciate that. And take care.
Thanks again, Tony, and we will see everybody next week.
Thank you, guys.